KUOW podcasts are made possible by listener support. Become a new or renewing member today at KUOW.org.
You're looking at an economy that's really rough, and you're looking at jobs, and we stopped by one of the stores yesterday, and the employees are deeply concerned, and certainly with the success of the show, there's a fondness to this community, and hopefully we can give back to it.
The reality is, you know, that so much has changed since we did Almost Live. Back in those days, traffic was gridlocked, people were annoyed with state government and high taxes, there were Starbucks on every block, the Mariners were lousy. It was a very different time.
Richard Sherman in the end zone brings it out, slides down at the 6-yard line. Ball game, baby! Ball game! Richard Sherman steps in front, picks it off, and who better to save it for the Seahawks than Richard Sherman?
Ball game, baby. We're going to talk about the Seahawks. That was a clip from last week's Seahawks game. Pat Cashman, John Keister, Chris Cashman talk about their new comedy show on TV, The 206. And we start with Patrick Dempsey. He was talking about Tully's. It's all coming up today on Weekday. So actor Patrick Dempsey, who's, you know, have you seen the show? Have you seen The Grey's Anatomy? His investment group agreed Thursday night to pay $9.15 million for Seattle-based Tully's Coffee. They beat out a bid from Starbucks. Melissa Allison is Seattle Times business reporter.
Starbucks is coming through and saying that between their offer for about half of the stores and someone else's offer for about half of the stores, they were together offering more than $10 million. So I'll be working today to try to get to the bottom of that.
I was surprised at how little they were able to buy this business for. $9.15 million, you wrote, $2 million in liabilities, the rest is cash. That's just a lot of cash, but not that much money for this chain.
Well, it depends on how you look at it. I mean, this chain's been around 20 years, and it's only made money 2 years, and that was because of sales. That was because it sold off part of its business those 2 years. So it hasn't been profitable, and at times it's really been burdened with debt.
Right, it had that debt from Green Mountain, right? Which is it still paying that off, or is it just owe it on coffee?
Actually, the Green Mountain sale is what paid off the debt. They had debt just from operating, from growing as fast as they did. Some of it was from, I think, the Benaroya family and other places, and it was enormous. It was getting to the point where they were saying that they might not be able to continue operating, and then they sold the wholesale business, and the cash from that is what enabled them to pay off that debt.
I see. So where's the value in this chain?
Now you've changed your tune, haven't you?
Yeah.
I know. I mean, a lot of people are wondering how, after all of these years of Tully's operating unprofitably, how is a new owner going to do it? Is it a problem with the people who've been managing it previously? And they've had plenty. They've had, I don't know, 8 or 9 CEOs, or is it a problem that can be fixed? It'll be interesting to see.
Why was Starbucks interested? They weren't worried about the competition.
I know. I thought that was interesting, too, because they have this area pretty well carpeted, don't they? I don't know why they were interested. It sounds like they were just trying to do some fill-in, and there are only 47 stores, and they were interested in about half of them, so it wasn't a ton of stores that they were going to add.
Melissa Allison is Seattle Times business reporter. By the way, Starbucks sounded like, I don't know, was it sour grapes? Or did Hollywood celebrity trump financial sense?
It would be hard to believe that in Seattle, which isn't a very celebrity manic city, that just because of his name, Patrick Dempsey got it. There must be a business reason, but I definitely sensed some unhappiness on Starbucks' part that their bid with the other one, which apparently added up to more money, wasn't the one that was chosen.
You wrote in your article this morning, Melissa, if a bankruptcy court judge approves the acquisition on January 11th, the deal is expected to close by the end of the month. Any chance that the judge would not approve?
I wonder about that. I mean, I don't know how these things work. In bankruptcy court, when you have a party that's really unhappy they didn't get the company, but I wouldn't be surprised if Starbucks didn't come in and say, look, this offer was more lucrative. Why are they taking the other one?
Yeah. Well, maybe we don't understand the value of a Hollywood celebrity attached to a coffee chain. I mean, there could be all kinds of names. Tully's could become, you know, like, I don't know, Gray's Coffee, or there could be different parts of the body that they could be selling.
It could be. It'll be very interesting to see how they market things going forward.
Big Patrick Dempsey pictures as you walk into the store.
And I liked what you said about McSteamy.
Yeah, I wish that was mine. It's a good one, though. Give me a double McDreamy with extra non-fat. there are many a coffee joke to come. That was Melissa Allison. She reports for the Seattle Times as a Seattle Times business reporter, reporting about the successful bid by Patrick Dempsey's group to take over Tully's. Last month, the Washington Education Association board voted to financially back a challenge to the new charter schools amendment once a challenge occurs. Mary Lindquist is president of the Washington Education Association. Mary Lindquist, thanks for talking to us.
Good morning. My pleasure to be with you.
So, and just to be doubly clear on that, that at this point, the board is saying they'd back a challenge, but there isn't a challenge in the offing yet.
That's correct. The board voted in early December to support a potential challenge. Our attorneys and our staff are talking with potential allies right now about joining together in a coalition. We're researching potential legal strategies, but nothing has been determined, nothing has been filed.
But you do want to challenge the amendment?
We're certainly looking at that. It has been for us all along a worry that it will drain money away from our already underfunded schools. And so our big focus right now is looking at the upcoming legislative session, particularly after the court reiterated last December that the state is not making adequate progress towards fully funding our schools, despite their ruling a year ago.
A court challenge costs money. When you're talking about money on both sides of the docket, is this the right time to be putting money either by WEA or asking the state to put money into something like this when money is short?
Well, the real issue here is, what do we need to do to build a quality education system for the 1 million students who are in our schools, not for a handful that might end up in charter schools? And the state has a clear constitutional obligation to fully fund education, and that's our primary concern, and we'll put most of our energy into that issue, but we are giving consideration to the charter school issue.
Why not wait? I mean, the voters voted for Initiative 1240. Why not wait a few years to see if it has the impact that you worry it will have?
Well, Steve, I'm not an attorney. I may not be the best person to answer that question, but my understanding is, if you have a constitutional challenge, it's best to put that on the table early in the process rather than later.
Are you talking to the superintendent of public instruction, Randy Dorn?
We haven't had formal conversations with Superintendent Dorn at this point. I imagine as things, should things begin to gel and come together, we'll sit down and talk with him.
And Mary Lindquist says the WEA had any conversations with the supporters of charter schools as they move forward to set up these schools as a way to come together, to get what you want out of the charter schools while they try to get what they want.
Well, we certainly, the reality is we're going to have to comply with this law. And if it, as we move forward, we hope to be engaged in a conversation about the implementation of charters. But primarily, as I said, we're going to be focused on this upcoming legislative session and securing full funding for all the students in our schools. That's what the state constitution says is the paramount duty of the state, and we're going to be trying to hold legislators and other lawmakers accountable for that.
How? What's your plan?
Well, it's going to take a very intensive effort. We have a very strong ally in the courts. They issued a statement in December saying that the state has not made progress and that they have to come up with a specific plan to fully fund our schools by 2018, by the end of this legislative session. We'll be working with lawmakers to make sure that happens.
What did you think of the Joint Task Force on Education Funding's plan to fund education by 2018?
Well, you may know I sat on that task force.
And
I recognize that it was a hard task, a monumental task that they were given. I think they gave some very serious consideration. They have some revenue options I think we're going to have to look at. My overall impression is that they had a pretty modest beginning. I think they are going to find that their estimates of how much our schools need is probably a little low, and it's going to take billions and billions of dollars for the state to build the kind of education system our kids deserve.
Even though by the end of that time frame, they were looking at more than a few billion, I thought, in increased funding.
They're looking at about $4 billion, and I know that the attorneys from the news lawsuit believe that it's going to take more than that, but that will have to be worked out over the next few months and few years.
Republican senators that were part of that committee did not submit their own plan, and they are going to be, it looks like, in charge in the House. Do you have allies among the education committee chairs from the Republican side?
Well, there we have a number of Republican legislators who want to put education first in terms of funding. And, you know, education is way too important an issue to belong to one party or the other. It needs to be a bipartisan effort, and we need to work together to make sure that we are doing right by the students in our classroom.
But when you say put education first, and the Republican lawmakers who support that, that also means that they're looking at cuts to other aspects of the social service system or other aspects that the state spends money on, which could affect the social service system. And in the end, that all comes back to affect how people are moving through schools.
Well, let's remember, our public schools are probably the largest social agency of the state of Washington. We see all of the students who come to the public schools, and when they come to our schools hungry, homeless, without adequate medical or dental care, it impacts their education. I don't think you can necessarily separate one from the other. Our kids need to come to school healthy and ready to learn, and they need a high-quality education.
Well, Mary Lindquist, I'm going to circle back around to that idea of a lawsuit against the charter school amendment then, because if you try to have allies on both sides of the aisle, you know that there are people who look at the charter school effort as a way to, I don't want to characterize their beliefs, but as a way to look at the union's power and maybe bring about some reform in that power, change in that power. Aren't you just setting yourself up to be in a fight with the very same people you want to fund education fully if you go after the charter school amendment?
Well, the people who support charter schools are not necessarily of one party or the other. They seem to come in all stripes and sizes, though they tend to be people with a lot of more money in their pockets than the average person. And I think we're going to work with legislators who are pro-charter schools. We're going to work with legislators who are against public sector unions. We're going to work with them all because our kids deserve that.
Do you think that means any reduction in the union's, an agreed-upon reduction in the union's influence on health care, on contracts, on pay, on seniority, on evaluation in order to get the larger funding issue settled?
No, I think the talk about the power of the union is perhaps exaggerated. The real power lies in the fact that the teachers and the educators who work with our students every day are among the most respected members in our communities. And when they speak up, people listen because they are respected and because the public knows they're dedicated to the students. So I don't think it's an issue of the big bad union. It's really a matter of teachers being among the most respected people in our communities.
All right, Mary Lindquist, I appreciate you taking the time this morning.
Thank you.
Mary Lindquist is president of the Washington Education Association. Last month, their board voted to support a challenge to the charter school amendment when it arises, and they're looking at where that challenge might arise. We are looking for some Facebook fans. We want to get up to 6,000 Facebook fans by the end of the day. And I know that sounds like sending a rocket ship to Mars, but come on, we could try. So if you know our Facebook page and you have not yet liked it, Weekday on KUOW, do like it. And I'll remind you a little later.
It's 19 minutes past 9 o'clock. Are you ready for some football? The Seahawks are in the playoffs, and we're going to be talking about that next.
K
47 degrees in Seattle, mostly cloudy sky. Forecast calls for clouds through the day. Chance of rain mainly this morning, and we don't expect to get much warmer than it is right now.
On the next To the Point, the death of a young woman gang raped on a bus in India has sparked protests across the country. Indian women complain of oppression by cultural, political, and legal systems, even as they take leadership roles in politics and business. The role of women in a modernizing world power. Next time on To the Point from Public Radio International.
That's this morning at 11, right here on KUOW 94.9 Seattle. KUOW is a self-sustaining service of the University of Washington.
Stepping into the weekday, Seahawks zone, the Cal zone. Seahawks Calzone, I don't know. Seahawks are three-point favorites in this Sunday's NFC wild card on the road against the Redskins, and even public radio has to pay attention to that. Mayor McGinn has a flagpole bet with the D.C. mayor. Both teams are on a winning streak. Seahawks, their best ever to close the season. Danny O'Neill covers the Seahawks for the Seattle Times. Danny, this has to be good times for you.
Yeah, absolutely. Anytime there's an insatiable appetite for the meaningless dribble that I pour out, it's a good day for me.
It's not meaningless dribble?
No, it's not. But, I mean, there are more important things in the world than sports. And for a lot of the times with this franchise, this is a forgettable time of year. This is a team that is, while it's been to the playoffs 5 of the past 8 years, is not known as one of kind of the NFL powers. And it's exciting. This is the third most successful season they've ever had, going 11-5.
You know, I watched my beloved Ducks do a fine job in the Tostitas Fiesta Bowl yesterday. So even people who don't follow football can get excited this time of year.
I'm not sure what makes me cringe more, like your beloved Ducks or the Tostitos Fiesta Bowl.
Oh, it's totally the Tostitas Fiesta Bowl. My son refused.
I don't know.
My son's refused to watch it because he said, I don't watch a bowl game when it's sponsored by a tortilla chip.
A fine young man, thinking on his own. That's great.
You had a piece in the Times about how Pete Carroll had built this team brick by brick. What did you learn from that, thinking about it in that overview?
Well, I think that one of the things that was the biggest question when he came to the team, because you have a guy, I mean, he's been, there's other players, the coaches like Nick Saban has been very successful, but I mean, he is a historically successful college coach. But also USC, you are going to get the creme de la creme in terms of players. Like, he can count on having 10 to 15 of the 100 best high school players coming to play for him each year. And the NFL does not work that way. The NFL's structure is to divide the talent as equitably as they can. They do it with the salary cap, so it limits how much you can pay your players. They do it with the draft order, with the worst teams picking first. And I think that what we've seen is that it's not just Carroll. But Carroll did not impose his vision for what he wanted in terms of player acquisition. He let his general manager, John Schneider, pick the guys that they thought were best, and they've made the most out of those players. They've done that in terms of later-round draft choices, like Richard Sherman, who's a quarterback, who's probably had the best year on their defense. He has 8 interceptions, which is tied for the franchise record. They've done it. They've gotten other players late that have really came out. They've gotten the most out of other guys that were completely overlooked by other teams. Brandon Browner played for 4 years in Canada. They signed him, and he's been this 6'4", very awkward-looking cornerback who's played great for him. Red Bryant was about to get cut. He was a player that they inherited from the previous regime. He played inside on the defensive line, a defensive tackle, and they moved him to end, which at the time they did it, I thought that this is one of these experiments that they try in the offseason and never really amounts to much. He's become a huge difference maker, and right now is the highest-paid player on their defense.
All right, so now we have this playoff matchup. And, of course, as they say, it's a new season when you go into the playoffs. What do you think?
I think that really, I mean, it's going to be tough for Seattle to make a long run given the fact that they're going to play each week on the road. And the likelihood of them, they have one chance to host a home playoff game. And it would be if they won 2 and the Minnesota Vikings won 2, then they would host the conference championship game. That's hard. And for all the excitement that's engendered, this is a franchise. They have not won a road playoff game since 1983. It was December 31st, 1983. They've lost 8 in a row, which is the longest stretch in second longest stretch in NFL history. Only the Lions have lost more in a row. But I feel like this team, the fact that they've played games as close as they have all year, and they have a quarterback who's really played better in the second half of the season, I think that when you look up all these different, they're a very championship caliber team, the way they're put together, the way they play, and the kind of season they've had.
We're talking to Danny O'Neill, who covers the Seahawks for the Seattle Times. Seahawks will be going into the playoffs. All right, so you got this big matchup between these two rookie quarterbacks, Russell Wilson, Redskins, Robert Griffin III, RG3, I believe I'm supposed to call him that. What's important about this? What do we need to know about these two guys?
Well, the thing you need to look at, these are part two guys. There's three quarterbacks in this draft class that are in the playoffs, which is remarkable. That's never happened before. When the season started, there were five rookies who were starting for their teams, which is the most in history. And the fact that three of them are on their team in the playoffs is remarkable. Like this might be a class that we end up looking back and saying is one of the best groups of quarterbacks to come into the league, with Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin III, and then Russell Wilson. Griffin was someone, Washington basically kind of cast their lot with Griffin before they even drafted him. They had to trade a ton of picks. They had to trade their first-round picks in the next 2 years, as well as a second-round pick this year, just to kind of move up to get him, and they only had to move up four spots. So in the NFL, if you don't have an elite quarterback, everyone's wanting to know how you're going to get one, and Washington decided that this was the guy they were going to go with before he even played it down for him. By that trade, they committed to him. Whereas Russell Wilson was someone that Seattle picked in the third round, and they had high expectations for him, but that's not a position that Seattle wasn't beholden to play him at all. And in fact, Russell had to convince the team that he was ready to start this year. If you look at the second half of the season and how similarly these two players played, they're guys with what they do on the field is similar in that they're both threats to run, they're both very big arms who are very accurate. And I think there's nothing quite as exciting in the NFL as when a team finds a young quarterback that it thinks is the guy. This is the guy that's going to bring us untold championships. It's kind of like Willy Wonka's golden ticket. and you have two teams that really feel they've found that guy, and the kind of the excitement that generates inside a fan base. I mean, Washington's a team, they have not hosted a playoff game since 1999. That was the last time they won their division championship. Whereas Seattle, they made the playoffs 2 years ago, but that was the season where they were 7-9, and basically they made it with the asterisk of won the world's worst division ever. And it's different now, and I expect this to be a really, it's certainly the most anticipated matchup of this weekend's playoff games.
You know, I heard who did I hear? Joe Theismann say, oh, it's going to be the Redskins. No doubt about it. Do you have
He's got a little vested interest having played for that franchise.
A little bit. So what do you say? What do you got to predict the score?
Yeah, I kind of came to it this morning, and I always feel a little bit bashful about picking the Seahawks, because you kind of come across looking like it's the team that you're closest to, and I think you can get sort of miss the forest because of all the trees when you're that close to the team. But I do think that this team is really well positioned to win this game. I think it's not going to be like a super high-scoring game, but I see it like 24-20 Seattle.
Really? Tight, but Seattle pulling it out. They'll move the ball down the field a little more.
Yeah.
Danny O'Neill, I appreciate talking to us and taking the time.
Thanks. I hope you well in your recovery from the fandom. I hope you see the light at some point.
I have Ducks and the Huskies. I went to both schools, so I can be both.
There can only be one, though. Like, when you come to that, like, I was born in Oregon, and I got out of that state as quick as I could.
There can only be one. I'll think about it. Danny, thanks.
Take care.
Danny O'Neill covers the Seahawks for the Seattle Times. The Seahawks are currently a 3-point favorite in this Sunday's NFC wild card on the road against the Redskins. Don't forget, football fans, Facebook friend us weekday on KUOW. We got to boost those numbers into like lower Seahawks attendance range.
Sketch comedy returns to Seattle television, local sketch comedy, that is, with the 206. We're taking that up in a minute. 94.9 KUOW Seattle.
Next time on The World, Mexicans living undocumented in Mexico. Parents don't always report the births of their children.
They don't understand the importance of having a birth certificate until they have to get the children to school.
But one man is helping Mexico's undocumented people to attain the rights of citizenship and dignity. That story next time on The World.
That's later today on KUOW's Afternoon News Magazine, today from 3 to 7 p.m.
Support for KUOW comes from IFC, presenting a new episode of the sketch comedy series Portlandia, starring Fred Armisen and Carrie Brownstein, airs tonight at 10 on IFC. Local channel listings at ifc.com.
46 degrees and mostly cloudy in Seattle. I'm Bernard Ouellette. It's 9:30.
Hello?
Hey, Pat.
Yeah, it's John.
Hey, John. How you doing?
Yeah, hey, have you heard all the buzz that's going on about the 206?
Nope.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's,
you know, all over the web. There's it's been on the TV, radio. There's some newspaper articles. It's great.
News to me.
Well, what, are you living in a cave?
Yeah. Yeah.
You may remember Almost Live. It's gone, but not forgotten. I think I just watched it last week.
It's not really gone.
It's not gone?
I had forgotten it. Almost Live, that's right.
No.
It's like, are petroglyphs gone? No, yeah, they're still there.
No, it's there.
You're the TV equivalent of petroglyphs.
It never went away. And this is John talking now.
They have a graphic under your name.
Can you talk in more of an FM voice, John?
I'll try.
More like this.
Let's bring John into the conversation.
I was on the day they got us together in a room.
It's John.
And said, okay, you guys are going because of these reasons, which, because of these reasons. All right, anyway, you guys are fired.
However.
And I said, oh, so then this week will be the last show? And they were like, real kind of sing-song way. Oh, no, we're not going to take the show off.
But you guys.
We're not going to take the show off the air.
You get money each week.
You guys, right? Oh, tons.
You get big checks.
No, we don't get a cent.
John Keister, Pat Cashman, and Chris Cashman are producers, writers, and performers of The 206, a new show.
You know, John, I've been getting checks regularly.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah, I should have checked that box.
Getting ripped off, man.
I forgot to check that box, yeah.
Shall I say premiering Saturday, January 5th, after Saturday Night Live? I imagine on tape, because you guys
are... You'd say tomorrow night.
I could.
That makes it sound like real, urgent. Tomorrow night.
You guys, it's not live, though.
Tomorrow night.
Because you guys will be asleep by then, right?
Two of us.
Chris will be up.
Profiling.
Yeah.
They could be wide awake.
No.
Yeah. No. We actually have, yes, we taped the first show in front of a live audience, and it was fantastic, and it'll be on tomorrow night. So, yeah, that is the message. Unfortunately, you can't attend the live taping if you're hoping to, but fortunately, that means you don't have to show up at 1:05 to come to the taping.
Ultimately, you can attend a live taping, but the first taping is done. It's already done.
And then Sunday, January 6th, or day after tomorrow. 7:30, 11:30 on Kong. Yeah. How did you find money for this? That's my first and most important question. I noticed that you have many reputable sponsors.
Well, that's what I was thinking. Actually, just really quickly, that's the way that television works these days. They'll give you space, but they will not give you anything other. They'll give you airtime, but you go out and you find your own sponsors, and that's what we did.
That's what's kept Almost Live from coming back. You know, for 10 years, these guys have been getting people saying, hey, man, why don't you bring it back? For 10 years, people have been saying, well, hey, why don't you bring it back then? Help. You can't. The money isn't there. People don't understand how that works. TV stations don't say, sure, well, here's a contract. We're not being paid by King. So we had to do it the old-fashioned way. We had the idea. It's a startup business. We keep telling people. It's like we're doing it out of the garage. We are the crew. You're looking at the writers. We're the editors, all of that stuff. We had to really bootstrap it. And the toughest part was going out and finding advertisers. And we're lucky. Northwest Cadillac stepped up. Alaska stepped up. Stingray Auto Repair stepped up. And Sturtevant Sports stepped up.
Four people. Okay. You got them all in.
I was going to read them anyways, except that you didn't have Stingray there on the page. So you might want to take care of that.
Through at the wire. We'll take care of that if you're a
last-minute hero.
Good. Now we said Stingray three times.
Yeah.
That's good.
What does that mean? Does that mean they have committed to 20 shows?
$1 million each.
We don't have to work again is what that means.
Excellent.
No, they write a check, you know, and then we'll do some shows. If they like it, they'll write another check and we'll do some more. And that's the way it is these days.
You could have taken it to public television with something like that. It's all the same.
We couldn't get a meeting.
Yeah.
Oh, we're taking it to public television.
You need a little Downton Abbey in there.
Actually, what you're saying, yes, that's the model that was 30 years ago or however long ago in public television. That's the model that everybody uses.
Yeah, and you will have pledge drives.
Isn't this hilarious? Isn't this hilarious so far?
Don't you have? Well, I didn't ask you to come to be funny.
Okay,
you're saving all that.
Right, you did that for the Seahawks too, right? Now, what's the funding behind the shirts and this? Right. Yeah.
I did ask him about how they feel about the game.
Yeah. Okay.
How do you feel about your comedy work now?
We'll.
I just you wanted a public radio question.
Yeah, we'll let public opinion dictate that. You know, in this age, we've talked about this too. Maybe it's our paranoia.
This age, did you mean?
But social media and all of that gives people the opportunity to say unkind things about you no matter what. If Mother Teresa was still alive, there'd be guys saying, who's that old broad?
They're probably still saying that about her.
So,
I know I am.
We're the bags under her eyes.
We just are going to put out the best product we can. We think we're doing that. And there's some stuff to laugh at in there.
Yeah.
We always felt that Almost Live was... Its mission was to not try to do Bill Clinton jokes and all that sort of stuff. It was to make fun of the neighborhoods and the towns and this area and the people that run government here and all the rest that goes with that. And in that respect, the 206 honors the same pledge.
Your legacy continues. Next hour, we have our news panel, and it's five older white men will be in the studios, and of course, we all said high five and white guys.
Right,
but see that
now we say anymore. Now we say high fiber white guys.
Yes,
well, and everybody germophobic now, so it's the fist bump. It'd be the fist bump and white guys because nobody wants to high-five or touch hands
with plastic over your fist. Yeah.
It's the 206. Are you leaving out 250-253?
Okay, you've now identified the really funny first question.
Yeah, thank you.
So is that going to run in the 425?
John addresses that issue right out of the gates. We'll tell you that. Tomorrow night, out of the gates, we will address concerns of
area
code
that.
Exclusion.
I think we probably do more mockery of other area codes in this first show than of the 206.
That's probably a good idea.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and that's the question, is everybody wants to know. It seems like there was anxiety in the crowd and even online of people. I hope they haven't forgotten about Linwood. Have they forgotten about Burien? Or just tell me they – because the truth is things have changed. A lot of cities have changed, Ballard and all these places. So a lot of people say, how are you going to make the same jokes? Obviously, we're not trying to make the same jokes. Things have evolved, and 2013 has already provided a pretty cool new platform for us.
It has?
Because of these new laws that have happened.
Are you kidding?
McDreamy just brought
along
Starbucks.
How long have you been on vacation?
Oh, I see. You mean – yes, McDreamy is – by the way, the McSteamy. I think I've trademarked that.
McSteamy is back and McRib.
You asked a very good question.
Who's going to talk about this?
How come they only got $9 million for that entire company? That was a good question.
Yeah.
That seemed weird to me. Shouldn't it be billion?
Did that include the scones and everything?
Yeah, everything.
Just the coffee?
Yeah, I guess so.
It's even some of the businesses.
Wow.
Oh, anyways.
Anyway.
So, yes, there's many things to talk about. I haven't been on vacation for a while.
Though. Yeah, there's suddenly it's the sort of thing where it's almost like a dream come true that just weeks literally before we go on the air, it's suddenly weed is legal.
Pot vending machines,
yes.
I was telling my son that if Top Pot Donuts didn't already exist, what a great name for a dispensary, Top Pot.
Well, yeah. They may branch out.
They might very well soon. I saw that article, yesterday, day before. They're considering vending machines with weed in them. So there are so many things to talk about.
I saw an iPod vending machine yesterday at Macy's. Have you seen these? I mean, I'm sorry, I was going to bring
this up.
It sounds
like a monologue. Have you seen these?
Have you
seen these? No, it's like these?
Do they take cash or do you have to have a credit card?
No, you put a credit card in and it's like, I mean, it's like a gum machine, but it's iPod. I was like... Man, that's
you can't be walking into stores to buy one of those. I gotta have it right now. Yeah. Shooter's my iPod. I'll buy a new one.
Yeah.
Gotta have it.
All right. So there's things to be funny about.
Yeah.
Anything very local that you're anything you're not gonna touch? No, of course
you,
not, right?
You?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
KUOW.
Yeah, do not mess with public radio.
No.
We'll come after you.
Certainly. I know that. No, I don't think we would ever.
There's nothing we have come up with yet that we thought, nah, we better stay away from that. I mean, you know, the truth is none of us have.
Language, though, right? You still have the language restrictions of typical, of typical broadcast TV.
I think we push it a little bit more these days. I think we have. But, I mean, everybody does. Really.
I mean, we're talking about a very late night show here, for one thing, and Almost Live. Its last production was, what is it, John? 14 years ago?
No,
yeah,
like that. So it's a different TV landscape now, and so we
smaller cameras.
And as we established, the model is different. That we're doing this independently. You know, we're not taping this at King. We're not doing this really even in partnership with them, other than that we're a broadcast partner.
Where'd you have the live audience?
We actually did it in the 425, the first taping. We did it in an old fire station that has been converted to a studio. And I think people will think that's neat, too. Folks wanting to connect the dots and assume, is it going to be the same? Is it going to be no, don't assume it's going to be the same. The humor will remind you of Almost Live, but the look immediately is very different. It's a very different looking studio. The setup, the audience isn't in grandstands. They're behind us. They're a part of the show. You see them in the shots. It's really neat.
But smells different, too, I think.
Mm-hmm. But you're always going to have a live audience. That's the goal.
Yes.
We think so.
We actually had talked about, again, the model from the ground up, thinking, okay, the landscape has changed. This way, I think last April that we decided we wanted to maybe do this. We knew it would be a steep hill to climb, but we talked about it. Let's put some stuff online, see if people are interested. Studios, too expensive. How would this work? We started really getting down to the basics again, going back to that entrepreneur thing. This was a startup out of the garage. We had a product, and all of a sudden we had orders for it. So we had to figure out how to fill the orders of laughs. So we tried to do it as cheap as possible. We said, okay, we're just going to do bits. We'll do raps on the street. But then fans were talking about this, so we said, let's do a live event. We held a live event at the Triple Door, and it sold out just through mention on Facebook, and 300 people showed up. We tested out some of the material, did jokes, and people were just so happy to have fun and laugh at ourselves again, that we knew something was happening. And once we met after that, we said, you know what, we got to rethink the audience thing, because that was neat.
That's
and
great.
People were thrilled to be there.
Yeah,
we're just sorry we came along post Greg Nichols. That was our biggest disappointment, but we'll move on.
You don't think you have mayor and mayoral candidates to mock in upcoming?
No.
Yes, no. Mayor McGinn is
all above reproach.
He's great.
He's off limits.
Yeah, no, he's good. What I enjoy about him is that he hasn't done enough for the cyclists in this. And I'm like, he hasn't done enough. That's all they do. I have this idea that if you ran a bicycle as the candidate for mayor, that would win. If you ran again,
And the final tally, the bicycle.
Mayor Schwinn.
Yes. Yeah.
You finally have Mayor McSchwinn.
Yes. Hold rallies at spin classes.
It's unbelievable to me. That's the answer for everything.
My people.
Here.
You and I we're going out later and biking around.
Okay, good.
Here's a clip from one of the sketches you posted on your website.
Well, I'm voting for John because he's a leader and a great communicator. I've seen John talking to ordinary people. He even looks them in the eye, and he nods when they say things to him. And it's not just people in his neighborhood. I mean, I've seen John talking to construction workers. I mean, the guy's actually wearing a hard hat and protective eyewear. It's like he's one of them. His ability to rally the community is really impressive. I mean, the guy runs the most successful fight club in the state out of his basement. I mean, sure, it's illegal, but John's looking to change that.
Back in there!
He's so passionate about getting to know people in his community. He'll walk from neighborhood to neighborhood just to rifle through their mail.
When it comes right down to it, I think that John really needs this, you know? I mean, the guy just sits on his porch day in and day out. Kind of depressive.
Hi, I'm John, and I'm asking for your vote because I want to bring about change. Now, we don't have to nail down exactly what that change is right now, but rest assured, if you give me the vote, I will find something that needs changing, and I will change it.
Vote for John, please. He really needs this.
That was Nichols' campaign slogan, too. Vote for change, Nichols.
Yeah.
So we kind of cribbed that.
That, of course, is not something that's going to run on the show. That was during, you know, pre-production.
I think I saw that ad.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
yeah, I think you did. I think,
John was very bummed out by
a million times.
The fact that we weren't on the air yet in political season. And we said, well, come on, it's the Internet, it's Facebook. Let's do what we want to do. So we just wrote that up and got it and posted it.
These horrible ads that everybody does that when you turn on local television, it's just blanketed with the tell whoever to stop doing this, or and just talking to random groups of people.
But this year, it's old men sitting around a table casually, unaware that there are cameras,
smoking cigars,
and they know exactly the laws that have been passed. The financials, they happen on top of mind. They happen to know all the figures and dollars.
That was my favorite commercial.
Those are just too
that
good.
Was a good one.
Too good.
You're in the age of satire, right? And you have all these other satire programs that are at the top of the heap. Nervous? You're the voice of the new generation, Chris. It's all on your shoulders.
No, I mean, look, we are fully aware that there is a giant bullseye on our back, which we tried to get Target to sponsor. They weren't going for it. Mm-mm. But we know that, you know, no matter what, these guys, we're not trying to bring back Almost Live. We simply want to bring back – we wanted to bring back MASH, but they didn't go for that. No. But we're just trying to bring back local comedy, funny and to people to connect the dots and say, it's not the same. We just want to have fun again, and we're lucky that we had some partners that want to as well, and King 5 has been great in helping us make that happen.
What neighborhood is going to be first skewered once you do look at the 206? Ballard? I'm trying to figure out.
John addresses all of this right out of the gates.
I'm trying to remember the first neighborhood.
I was just wondering what's been bugging you most. Which neighborhoods have been bugging you most?
That has to be kind of a secret.
Yeah. We don't want to
there's one that's coming right out of the gate. But if we said it, you'd be,
you said it's not Almost Live, but I was looking at the Peculiar Podcast homepage.
Thank you for plugging that.
That Pat Cashman does with Lisa Foster, former, what did you say, Seattle radio personalities, and we use that term loosely. Pat Cashman and Lisa Foster are back on demand.
Former personalities would be more like it,
But you have
borderline.
You have a listing of things we're talking about.
Yep.
And there I saw one of the things you're talking about. Radio is big, by the way, radio. But didn't I see Bill Nye? Not much discussion of Bill Nye, but I saw a little discussion of Bill Nye.
Yeah.
So are you bringing the old band back together at some point?
Well, we mentioned Bill because Bill and I, unfortunately, we did the commercials for the tolls on 520 Bridge. You might remember that. And then it was like, I got my good to go, got yours. And, Bill came up and we did that. And then it turned out that the Department of Transportation didn't have theirs, and they messed it up. And then there was this big investigation and they used our ads as the illustration of what went wrong. Like, we were the ones that, so I go off a little bit on that.
We're going to try to use our show in a public service sort of way to do things like that. How to beat the 520 toll, for example.
There are tricks.
There's tricks you can use to keep from paying the toll.
Yeah, you go on I-90.
No. You go through the bridge. Well, this will be revealed in a future show.
Perhaps.
It won't work for forever, but it'll work for a short time.
But you actually brought up a good point because that is one of the other things that people comment
on. Yeah, I'm sure.
Are you bringing this guy back? What about this? What about that? Again, going back to the startup model, we have to try to figure out how to pay our own bills first before we staff up. So, again, people want to connect the dots and say, bring this back. What about that character? No, there is no intention or no plan at this point to bring back
any people,
familiar characters.
People always ask me, what about Billy Kwan? Is he coming back? The fact of the matter is Billy Kwan has gout. No, he can't do that stuff
anymore.
He's not
kicking anybody.
No,
right.
No.
And actually lives in Oklahoma.
Yeah.
Which is true.
So. How many shows do you think you'll have or have you got?
We've already put together a best of DVD. It's just clips from the first two shows.
And we have commentary on that.
Yeah. And then we're going to hope to put out.
I got those pants at Marshall's, I remember.
Yeah, we'll just see, as the response and what the sponsors think and as much as they want to write the checks.
Jokes aside, January is sort of the bar for us. We have, we're going to be on tomorrow night. We premiere, and then we're going to be on again the next week. And we want people to tune in and watch it, and they will be the bar on if people want to laugh at ourselves again.
When's the next live taping? Is that scheduled?
We're not making that public yet, just because there has been a lot of interest and curiosity, and we don't want to overwhelm studios or places that we've done it at. So we've basically just been saying, go to our fan Facebook page, 206TV on Facebook, and that's where we will post the next possibility, because we're you know, it's great. People want to come, they want to be a part of it, but we can't put that info out yet.
And you're Twittering galore at Mr. Pat Cashman, at Mr. Pat Cashman,
Mr.
At Chris Cashman. Where's yours, John?
Yeah, I gotta get on.
Still, he's got a beeper.
So at King guy. 5 Seattle.
Yeah.
Did you hear about Twitter?
No, I just have Mary at home going, do we want to be friends with, you know, I
yell. 206 TV.
Yeah, sure, go ahead.
I yell from the other room. I can't.
Oh, and at the 206 TV. All right. I look forward to seeing it.
Thanks. Thanks for having us on, Steve.
I'm glad you guys came in. It was very nice of you to do it. The 206 premiering tomorrow night, January 5th, after Saturday Night Live on King 5, and then Sunday, January 6th, 7:30 and 11:30 on Kong TV. John Keister, Pat Cashman, Chris Cashman, producers, writers, performers, grips.
Editors.
Catering.
Go Seagulls.
Go Seagulls. Mm-hmm. That's right. They're going to win? Seahawks, yes?
Yes.
I don't know about the Hawks, but...
The Seagulls win.
Seagulls.
This is weekday.
Odds on favorites.
Now, what does the weekend weather look like? Nick Bond, Washington State climatologist. How's it look?
Well, kind of standard issue, northwest winter weekend. The showers are tapering off today, and it actually won't be too bad a day. It's, we're back in the comfortable embrace of the clouds. Some rain developing Saturday around midday into Saturday night. Maybe a break on Sunday in the morning, but the rain again in the afternoon. Temperatures, especially at night, considerably warmer than it has been. No more freezing temperatures for a while. And then another kind of wet system coming in Monday. And what I really have my eye on is a kind of an interesting situation shaping up for midweek.
What's that?
Well, it looks like a disturbance is going to be coming out from the northwest out of the Gulf of Alaska and bring some quite low snow levels with it. And right now, it's not looking like a big deal for the lowlands, but it might be kind of like the case we had in December after a pretty good windstorm in which there was an inch or so of snow in Everett one day in a convergence zone. The next day, there was some in the South Sound. And so there's the chance that in this kind of chilly pattern that we could have some localized snow showers in the lowlands.
So the embrace by the clouds, as you put it, still is allowing for some colder temperatures.
Well, next week. Up until then, a little bit warmer than it has been, especially the Monday system looks kind of on the warm side with the snow levels rising up above the passes, and so a little bit of rain on top of our snowpack, but it's not going to melt at all.
Well, it was cold riding, so I'm glad. I'm glad it'll be a little warmer, Nick, just even if it's just a little bit.
Yes.
How's the air pollution this time of year?
Well, yeah, you know, we've had the kind of quiet weather with the clear skies and, of course, the frosty temperatures. But while the sunshine is a good thing for most, one drawback is definitely the air pollution that accompanies those kinds of weather situations. And what I thought the listeners might be kind of intrigued by are the places where it tends to be more and less polluted. And that, it might be kind of a surprise. And in particular, the urban areas of Seattle are not too bad.
That's because there's fewer people burning wood stove?
That's right. Residential fireplaces and wood stoves contribute almost two-thirds of the smoke. And so places even near I-5 just don't have that high of pollution levels. And so one of the worst spots around is Lake Forest Park. And there, the cold air that develops near the surface during those clear, calm nights kind of pools down into the those low elevations, bringing the pollution with it. And so we got levels of particulate matters five times or so what they were in the kind of more urban areas, and to the level where it's probably kind of, you know, has health effects.
That's interesting, because you know there are those differences in regulations at these different in these different municipalities, different localities, and then you have the Puget Sound Air Quality Authority overseeing it all,
right?
Looking at those health effects overall,
right? And this case was not a particularly bad one by any means. There were stage one burn bans in Pierce and Snohomish County, but not King County. But just when we get this kind of weather, we can all help each other out by trying to limit the use of wood stoves and fireplaces.
All right. Point taken. Nick, I appreciate you talking to us.
Yeah, my pleasure.
Nick Bond, Washington State climatologist. He joins us with a weather outlook for the rest of the day, the weekend, into the following week, every Friday and weekday. And now.
And now.
This is the sound of the week. The sound of the week.
So many of you contributed to great sounds all through last year that Amina Alsadi, our producer, put together a montage of a whole bunch of sounds. We had it ready to go for our December 31st program, but the president preempted us, and we wanted to play it for you. These are sounds that she put together from all the different sounds that so many of you sent us this past year. Pumpkin the goat. all sorts of sounds. A montage of some of the great sounds you sent us in 2012. I hope you will continue to send us great sounds as well. Amina Alsaadi put that together. And that Sounds of 2012 montage is up on the Weekday on KOW Facebook page if you want to share that with some of your friends, if you heard some of your own sounds there. And that would also get you to like our page, and so we can get up to, 6,000 Facebook supporters. Come on, there's enough of you just liking sounds that we could get there. We're only at 4,100 right now, so you need to help us, because otherwise Katie is going to go home this weekend and wonder why Weekday on KUOW doesn't have 6,000 friends. I tell you, Bon Appetit had 450,000 friends, just to let you know, comparison. All right, we'll review the news of the week. Stay with us.
46 degrees in Seattle under a mostly cloudy sky. Forecast says clouds all day, chance of rain in the morning, and high temperatures not much higher than where we're at right now, mid-40s.
On the next To the Point, the death of a young woman gang-raped on a bus in India has sparked protests across...
Thanks for listening. The program you just heard was made possible by the financial support of our listeners. Support this program and others like it by making a pledge today at KUOW.org.